Seahawks fans, wherever you may be, welcome back for another edition of the Hawks Playbook Podcast. Join your host, Bill Alvstead, and co-host, sports writer and football analyst, Keith Myers, as we talk Seahawks football. Hey, welcome into this Hawks Playbook Podcast, Seahawks fans. I'm your host, Bill Alvstead, here with Keith Myers. After a tough road loss where the Seahawks had a real nice opportunity to get to 11 wins, but they don't. They drop one to the Rams. And we're here to talk about it along with everything else that's going on in the week. But first, let's check in with Keith. Keith, how you doing, man?
Man, I'm doing pretty dang good considering the loss. But, you know, at this point, these things don't get to me like they used to. And
that's the truth.
You just move on. This is still a team that's 10-3. We need to keep that in perspective when we get all freaked out over a bad loss.
Control our own destiny still, at least within the division. If we win out, yep, we've got a couple of definitely doable games. The next game is away at the Panthers. Then we've got the Cardinals. Both those teams are not only not very good, but they're currently struggling with a lot of different issues until we get to that 49er game at the end of the year, December 29th, week 17, 49ers at CenturyLink Field. That could be really the game of the decade. If you really think about it, it's a huge game considering both teams come in with a lot of promise. So let's just get right into it, Keith. This game was bad on a number of different levels, but I'll just start right at the beginning. One of our key running back players is out for the year. Rashad Penny, done in 2019. MRI confirmed. He's got a torn ACL, a few other little things wrong with his knee. He's out until training camp. Keith, what do the Seahawks do now that they can't count on Penny? They've got a few others on the roster. Do they look outside the team at this point, or do they go with what they got?
They go with what they've got. You've got Chris Carson, who has been the workhorse all year. He stays in that role. Penny was coming on and was really coming into his own and starting to show why the team used a first-round pick on him a couple years ago, because he was starting to make a really big impact. But it was still the Chris Carson show more than the Rashad Penny show. So that's going to stay. And then they're going to look for, you know, when Carson needs a breather or you know, that kind of stuff, when they want to change a pace, they'll go with one of their other backs. Now, in this last game, we saw CJ Procise as the guy. He was mostly ineffective and had the fumble. And then, but the other player that has a chance to actually make a big impact and take over some of those Rashad Penny snaps is actually Travis Homer, the rookie running back. And I would be very excited to see him in that role. That kid's got some speed and would therefore match a lot of what Penny was giving them as that change of pace back with the speed and the ability to run outside, which is not where Chris Carson's strengths are. So I think that it's a great fit for them to have Homer in that spot, but we'll wait to see what the team does. They may just roll with Procise and go with the veteran.
It sounds like they're going to go with Procise. Pete Carroll kind of alluded to that in a couple comments. It's not necessarily a bad thing. I think CJ Procise, if he was to get some carries, to get on a roll a little bit, get some rhythm going, he can be an effective ball carrier if he can stay healthy. The other option, too, is John Ursua has been hidden on the roster all year, inactive for virtually every game. But now might be able to come into play, might be activated on certain situations. We'll see how Travis Homer does. John Ursua is a dynamic runner as well that can be effective in open space, catching the ball out of the backfield and such. We'll see. Chris Carson's now going to even probably have a larger role. He was about, 75% of the carries, even when Rashad Penny was getting 10, 12 touches. And now Carson could look to get, he had 90% of the touches in this last game. And I don't know. I mean, it's just one of those things where you're kind of counting on that tandem developing for the playoff push. Mm-hmm. And if one was having a hard time, the other one you could exploit. And now there's a little question mark there. It just makes it a little tougher. We still have a dynamic offense. We didn't show against the Rams, but going forward, I still have confidence that we could be able to move the ball and score points.
Well, I mean, yeah, you go back to early in the year when, you know, Penny had his hamstring problem and missed a couple games, and it was the Chris Carson show, like, pretty much exclusively. And then, you look over the last couple of weeks, it really became a tandem where they were both running. Penny, the last 2 weeks, has made a major impact on the game, and it looked like he was in position to have a major impact in this game. I mean, this was the first drive. He was in there on the first drive, had a big play, and unfortunately, injuries happen, and it's terrible. And I feel really bad for him because he's just getting going. He's just showing us why he was a first round pick and how valuable he can be, and then he gets hurt, and so that's frustrating for him. But I think the team will be okay with Carson because, like, it were early in the year. They didn't have Penny out there. And you go back to last year when, you know, Penny was mostly, you know, kind of the third guy for the first part of the year. It was, you know, it was just more Chris Carson. And then they can play without Penny. I mean, he's not, this isn't like, you know, when the Seahawks would lose Marshawn Lynch, you know, his final year in Seattle. And all of a sudden you're looking at who could possibly step in for him. You know, Penny was the change of pace back. He was the second member of the dynamic duo. Not, you know, he was the Robin, not the Batman. And so I think that it is important to keep that in mind. This shouldn't, like, completely shut down Seattle's offense.
One would hope not. But after the opening drive that Penny was in there, had that 17-yard reception, we ultimately scored a field goal. After that, Seattle went 7 straight drives without any points. So who knows? And you know, here's the deal too. I mean, the whole team was bad. The defense mm-hmm. didn't have any energy. They lacked, urgency. They were overmatched. They were overcoached. They embarrassed themselves. I mean, let's talk about what went right in this game.
They were, you said overcoached. They were massively undercoached and outcoached, in this yes. game on both sides of the ball.
Right. There was a single bright spot to me, Quandre Diggs, the end.
Quandre Diggs played really well. He
played
was all
really
over
well
the place,
in a bad
making
situation.
Tackles. Had a couple of really nice interceptions that you would, these are the plays that you would expect a top end free safety to make, and he made them. One of which was a pick six. Of course, then, you know, Myers missed the extra point, which was frustrating, but Diggs can't control that. But yeah, I mean, he played really well, and that kind of ends the list of players who played extremely well, in this game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Seattle was missing a couple starters, Ziggy Ansah, Michael Kendricks, wouldn't have mattered. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't have mattered. Rams first mm-mm. 2 drives, 8 plays, 75 yards, touchdown. Second drive, 12 plays, 83 yards, touchdown. Third drive, they did a punt. Fourth drive, 10 plays, 75 yards, touchdown. They led 21-3 at halftime. The game was essentially over. I mean, Seattle yeah. wasn't going to show up. They weren't doing anything offensively. They didn't do anything defensively. It was just really bad. And, you know, the Rams out-schemed them, outplayed them. They needed that game more. It showed. I mean, it was just one of those deals where every once in a while, your team shows up and you've got greatness. You're hanging on the potential for greatness. Your team could take complete command and control of the NFC with a win. It'll, you know, keep the 49ers at bay. And we just kind of laid an egg. And sometimes that happens. But the team, like you said at the opening, still 10-3. They still have control of the NFC West should they win out. And they've got a legit chance to do that if mm-hmm. they can get that offense going. For some reason, Keith, the last 4 weeks or so, the offense has been anemic since that 49er game. Do you read anything into that? I mean, is there anything that you can tangibly look at and say, oh, yeah, this is why?
Well, there's a couple different things. One is the play of the offensive line has dropped off. It's Effetti in this game was particularly dreadful. Fluker's not a great pass blocker, and once the team got behind, same with Lopati, once the team got behind and needed to throw a lot, you know, now you've got these two guys doing the thing they're not as good at instead of the thing they are good at. And in those situations, what you'd like to think, especially at the end of the game, when you know you're throwing on every play, why not bring in a guy like Jamarco Jones, who is a significantly better pass blocker than either of those
two. That's a great point.
You're passing anyway, so you're not giving it, you're not telling the opposing team what you're doing by making these switches. So you just go with the guy who's the better pass blocker when you have to pass because it's late in the game. But you know, the Seahawks don't tend to make those moves and make those decisions. So we have to just kind of roll with it. But you know, those three guys have definitely not been playing as well. And then you add the loss of Britt at center and Hunt in there, and that's a massive drop-off as well. And so when the line, four out of the five positions, are just not playing as well as they were, that's going to be a lot of the problem. The other thing is that you got to look at Russell Wilson, and he was playing at a level which was historic for the first eight games or so. And then, you know, now he's kind of come back down to earth a little bit. He's playing more human, still playing really well. If you look at like the PFF rating for him in this last game, it was like 88, which is
shows highest you how, rated on the offense.
Yep. And it shows you just how awful the rest of the offense was besides Wilson, with all the dropped passes and all the missed routes and lack of effort and all those things. But, you know, if he comes down to earth just a little bit, I mean, this team needed him to be superhuman and a lot of it's scheme. I mean, people keep asking me why I'm critical of Brian Schottenheimer when the offense has looked so good at times. Well, yeah, it's looked so good at times when Russell Wilson's playing, you know, like a Superman. But when he gets back and he starts playing like a mere mortal who's just very good at football instead of, you know, an immortal, like God-like presence in there, and suddenly the offense is terrible. And you saw that a lot in this game, where everything was either a run up the middle or a deep shot. Like, yes, they had for a little bit there, they had some, you know, quick slants and the short passing game working.
Yep.
And you're like, that first okay, drive right?
Great. Yeah.
Yeah, you're like, okay, this is great. This is what's working. And then we never saw that again for the rest of the game.
Yeah, it was perplexing. So here's the deal. So there's two things, at least that I'm noticing, Keith, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. I'll start with the offensive line. That's kind of where you started, and I totally agree with that. Just to kind of take it that conversation to the next level, Russell Wilson has taken 18 sacks in the last four games, including 37 quarterback hits. Or excuse me, 25 quarterback hits. So 18 sacks, 35 hits. 35 hits, 18 sacks in just the last four games. Mm-hmm. Just to give you an example, Derek Carr with the Oakland Raiders has 20 sacks and 37 hits on the entire season in 13 games. So it's bad. In fact, 2019 will likely surpass 2018 as the highest sack total of his entire career. He just needs six more sacks and he'll equal 2018 sack totals, which were his career highs. So there's that. Okay. Now let's go into the scheme part of it. What I've noticed is that teams are playing Seattle with against the pass on first and second down to kind of force them to run. And so they run. They're playing in kind of a stack box, but with two high safeties back, and then which kind of forces them into some third and long situations frequently, and then they have to pass. They're, instead of doing that quick pass game where they're just trying to pick up a first down, that's the time that they seem to want to elect to go for it, like in a plus 20 yard completion type situation, which. Certain teams are able to take advantage of their pass rush in those situations and get to Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. And you've seen that over and over again in the last 4 weeks. And the Rams were no different. I mean, the Rams has a really decent line. If the other line is the offensive line is poor that they're facing, and they work them into these situations where they're third and long, second and long, and it's just not a good combination. And you've right, the scheme thing is weird. Like, they were very successful with that quick short, concise, methodical, like march down the field mentality in that first drive that came up short, but that seemed like it was going to be able to work all night long. And they completely went away from it thereafter.
Yeah. And the thing is that this is one of those things that Schottenheimer has done his entire Seattle career, is there to be something like that that's working, and then suddenly it disappears from
the playbook. Because he went off the script.
And it's like, why? Why? You know, the script is giving you a series of plays that are working. You know, why would you go away from that? Well, and he went to, you know, the same thing he's gone to the last 3 or 4 weeks, which is these short runs up the middle and deep throws down the field.
Yes.
No attempt, you know, not a lot of stuff in the middle, not a lot of play action, just a lot of either run it up the middle or throw it deep. And teams are figuring that out. You have to watch for the deep throw, so you keep your safeties back, but you bring everybody else up to the line of scrimmage to stop the run, and you don't worry too much about the spot in the middle because the Seahawks won't attack it.
Yes.
And so they're not
putting... And they don't have anybody to attack it. I mean... Gordon, I mean, they've got Josh Gordon, but they're really only throwing to him a couple times a game, which shocks me at this point. And then we don't really have any tight ends other than Hollister. He's kind of undersized. He's a great pass catching guy. He's a little undersized in the middle, so they usually work him towards the outside edges, which is great.
Well, you can bring the, you know, they can bring DK Metcalf across the middle.
I totally agree.
You can do those kind of things. You've got John Ursulus, like, just collecting dust on the bench. He lives in the middle of the field. You've got, Josh Gordon, who would live in the middle of the field if they gave him more snaps and more opportunities, but they don't call plays that have routes in the middle of the field. It's like you have an out under, but they would run, they run a lot of stuff where, the player on the outside just runs deep or runs a post. And then the player on the inside in the slot runs like an out. And it's like, okay, that's a nice route combination that can confuse a corner and gives things like for Wilson to work with, but they're not attacking the middle of the field. They're not attacking the intermediate. And it's either they're really short or they're really long. And at some point you have to give Wilson some options that don't involve him holding onto the ball forever because the line can't do it. They can't hold up.
Interesting enough, I mean, we're a top 10 offense, so we're complaining about a top 10 offense only because it could be the next level. It could be really good instead of just good.
Well, and part of the reason why you complain is because how many three and outs? This was my complaint last year. Like, oh, look at the team. It was like, great. We had, as a top 10 offense and we should give Schottenheimer credit. Yeah, but they had the most three and outs in the league by a wide margin. Because sure, they get the points on those deep plays because Wilson has the ability to throw the deep ball better than anyone else in the NFL right now. But they're not efficient. A lot of three and outs, a lot of, drives that go nowhere and don't have a chance to go anywhere because of the play calling. And in reality, what they need to do is they need to play more to their strengths, which is, the play action passing, the quick passing, those intermediate routes. I mean, that's where this team is best. And they don't use that. So they sit back and they do a whole lot of nothing and then hope for the big play up to land eventually. And it has at times, but it's like, why is that
inconsistent?
Why is that the only thing you have going for you? It just doesn't make any sense.
So Seattle came into the game 10-2, 5-game win streak, ready to take the number one seed in the NFC, command of the NFC West and beyond, all that stuff. But they left the game the first time since 2017 without scoring a touchdown on offense, sixth time out of 125 times for Russell Wilson. He's been held without a touchdown. But Seattle has played the hardest schedule by DVOA in 2019 mm-hmm. through 13 games. So how much leeway do we give the team for looking poor at times when they've faced the hardest schedule?
Well, I think overall, the fact that they faced the hardest schedule and they're still 10-3, I think that's, this is why I said, like, let's be critical, but let's not overreact.
I think that's right.
It'd be different if they were 10-3, but they played the easiest schedule in the NFL. And you're like, okay, well, that's a mirage, right? They're not a good team. They're just, feasting on the awful teams in the league, but they haven't done that. They played a really tough schedule. In fact, the toughest schedule by DVOA. And so the fact that they're 10-3, I think you have to just go, okay, this was a bad game. It lacked energy. They were out-coached because the coaches just weren't prepared correctly in this game on either side of the ball. And just leave it at that and hope the team gets the tack together, because I think that their track record shows that they will get their act together, and that next week in Carolina, that the Seahawks will come out and they'll have a lot more energy. They'll play better as a group and go get a win against a bad team. It might not be pretty, and it might give us all heart attacks because of the fact that it comes down to the end, but I expect them to go get the win against a bad team.
Well, that's what football's all about. I mean, you got to win those big, huge games, so we'll find out. The one thing on the defensive side of the ball, it was encouraging the last, three, four games where the defense seemed to kind of turn it up a notch, step up, get some pressure, make some big plays, et cetera, hold teams down a little bit, kind of control games. That didn't happen in this game. And overall, they're still kind of a middling defense statistically. 22nd in points, 27th in yards, 29th passing overall, 13th in rushing. Just kind of a middle-of-the-road defense. I didn't bring DVOA into that. I didn't have a chance to look at it overall. Don't know exactly where they're ranked, but I have a feeling it's probably going to be around 20. And I wanted to bring up scheme a little bit because they've been playing this base defense scheme overall, and they continue to play it in this game, even though it wasn't working very well to stop the Rams at all, right? I mean, the Rams just went up and down the field. I can just point to tons of players. Gurley had 113 yards from scrimmage. Tyler Higbee had 116 yards. Robert Woods had 98 yards receiving, 29 yards rushing, et cetera, right? I noticed this about Bobby Wagner. Pro Football Focus says that Bobby Wagner's second against the run. Awesome. Right? Awesome. 29th versus the pass as a linebacker, ranked 29th. To me, that's the case for playing more nickel corner, specifically Ugo Amadi. I mean, like 3 or 4 weeks ago, Ugo Amadi was primed and ready to take over that spot, and they've barely used that position.
They haven't used.
Hakeem King is playing less than 20 snaps a game at that spot. They've stuck with their base defense. So far, it's gotten them to 10-3. But it shows the lack of ability to adapt when teams are attacking that and succeeding. And I just want your take on that.
Well, you look as a whole on the league, the move has been away from the base defense to the nickel. So the nickel has become the new base for most teams. And that was true for the Seahawks. And for a while, they were leading that charge, where the Seahawks were playing more nickel than any other team. And then this year, they've completely reverted to an old school 90s or 80s era defense, as far as now they're only going to play base scheme. They're only going to go into their nickel when they absolutely have to. And when it was Jamar Taylor as your nickel corner, I kind of got it. I mean, you've got good linebackers. You don't have a good third defensive back. Keep your best players out there. Go for it and do your best. But the thing is that it hasn't worked. Teams have figured out how to attack it, and they haven't changed.
Well, and Bobby Wagner's really struggling. I mean, you noticed that, right? He was chasing players all over the field, not ahead of them, not level with them, chasing them and not making plays.
Well, it's because they're now asking him to cover people that would have been covered by either the nickel corner.
That's exactly right.
Or by KJ Wright, who's better cover linebacker than Bobby Wagner is. So rather than picking up, you know, a running back out of the backfield, he's picking up the tight end that's, you know, trying to stretch the field. And so you're having him in different spots than he would normally be, and you're not playing to his strengths because you don't have that extra cover guy out there to help him. And I think that it's a problem. And to your point of saying, you know, Ugo Amadi's barely played. The truth is that after Pete Carroll came out and said that Amadi was going to be the guy that was going to take over for Jamar Taylor when Taylor was cut, Ugo Amadi has played exactly one defensive snap since then in three games. And that is, you know, obviously not what we were expecting, given Taylor.
How do you
cut.
Feel like Ken Norton and Pete Carroll are able to adapt to teams that are wanting to attack that? they seemed like they were very stubborn in staying with what they wanted to do in this game and didn't move out of that at all. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to jump to any conclusions here because we are 10-3 and we have improved on the defensive side of the ball, especially since Diggs has been amazing. But I'm still wondering what's going on with that three linebacker base defense in passing downs, on obvious passing downs. They're not going to the nickel. They're not getting a better defensive back on the field that could potentially make plays, at least hold receivers, you know, closer to the line of scrimmage, all that kind of stuff, you know, everything that goes into play with that. It's just frustrating. It's a note of, you know, that I want to talk about, but I don't want to dwell on it too much. What do you think? I mean, do you think it's a problem going forward?
Oh, I absolutely think it's a problem going forward. And I thought that once they made the commitment to go to Ugo Amadi, that we were going to start to see less of it. And with Michael Kendricks hurt in this game, so that means that they're playing the rookie Barton there as the third linebacker, which I'm all for. I like get Barton a playing time. The kid's got speed. He plays, he covers well. I mean, he's a guy that I want to see get more playing time. But the whole idea that you keep you're just trying to play your best 11, and that involves all three linebackers because you like the talent of all of them. Well, that's not true when Kendricks isn't in there. Now you got this rookie who barely has played all year. Is he still the best available guy so that way you play with the 11, or do you at that point?
All I have to do, Keith, is point to Bobby Wagner's ranking in Pro Football Focus as the 78th best linebacker in coverage. And I love Bobby Wagner, but I'm not even talking about Kendrick's level of coverage. I'm talking Bobby Wagner's 78th. Now, you can't tell me the Amadi wouldn't be better in those sorts of situations on passing downs. I don't know. I mean, even if it's just 15 snaps in a game, to me, it would make a big difference. But again, I'm not smart enough to know exactly why they're doing it and what effect they're trying to achieve by doing it.
I think they're trying to be different. Is because everyone's gone to the, like, the Seahawks were, they led the league in this conversion from going from the base to have the nickel is now the new base. And that's what you're in, you know, 75% of the time. And they were the team that pushed that envelope. Well,
and they had Coleman, and he was one of the best.
Well, and even before that, like, this was happening before they even traded for Coleman. This was this trend.
Jeremy
Lane,
and all, you know, you can go on and on with the guys they've had back there. It's just been amazing.
Yeah, and so they pushed the envelope that way, and the league followed along, and now everybody's playing their nickel a ton. But it's a passing league, and so there's a reason why everyone's playing their nickel a ton, and the Seahawks just showed that you can get away with it and not get gashed by the run, so other teams are doing it. And now what the Seahawks are trying to do is to be different. And to go, okay, so every other team plays the nickel a ton. We're going to come out here in base defense, and we're going to give you looks that you don't see every week. Because when you know, we're going to be different than everyone else. We're going to be something that you have to prep for, that all your other stuff that you game plan for, whatever, isn't going to work against us because we don't play the same defense.
So let me ask you this. Last year, at this time, we were ranked 23rd against the run. This year we're ranked 13th. Is that the reason? Is that the improvement that they were looking for? And is that the reason why they stay in base more times than not?
I would say yes in early downs, but why are they staying in base on 3rd and 10? That makes no sense, because at 3rd and 10 they're going to pass, and even if they run at 3rd and 10, it's going to be a draw, and you can stop them for 8 yards and still get the ball back. There's no reason to be in base in 3rd and 10 unless you think it's a competitive advantage. And I don't see it as a competitive advantage.
If I was an offensive coordinator and I looked at what Seattle was doing, specifically on 3rd down, if I was 3rd and 5 or longer, I would be running up to the line of scrimmage. I wouldn't even huddle. I'd call the play at the line of scrimmage. That's my base offense for the game against Seahawks, because I'm going to catch them in a three linebacker situation and base defense. I'm going to take advantage. You know, and teams are doing that, obviously. So,
well, the thing that really bugged me about the defense last night was the Rams did get to the line and snap the ball quickly, and the defense was just disorganized. They didn't even have people lined up. Even Chris Collinsworth kept commenting on how the Seahawks have people moving around, still trying to get lined up, and the snaps. I'm like, that cannot be. You cannot let that happen over and over.
Well,
and over
let's talk about that, Keith. Let's talk about the coaching and being prepared in this game, and what did you think?
I did not feel like they were prepared at all, especially on the defensive side of the ball.
I didn't. I was flummoxed. I mean, I just literally sat.
They did not have a plan for what to do against, you know, and the Rams had come out and said, we are going to run the ball with Gurley. He's going to get his touches.
I mean, it's been a while since I've seen Seattle so flat.
Yeah. And so, well, I mean, there's two parts. The energy and the lack thereof, that happens, especially road games, especially late in the season, especially after a couple of big wins, right when you take over the first place in the division. Like, there can be those letdown games. I hate it. I don't want to see it, but it happens. It happens to every team. And at some point it's going to happen, and I'm not going to blame that on coaching. For me, it is, we knew what the Rams were going to do in this game. They were going to pound the ball with Gurley. They were going to do a lot of play action, a lot of rollouts. They were going to get Jared Goff outside the pocket, and they were going to, you know, throw those passes. We knew this is who they are. This is all they've been, and they'd gotten away from it a little bit. They've said they were going to come back to Gurley, and they were going to make sure that he got his touches. They were going to go back to being that offense. They did it last week, so we knew it wasn't word of mouth and just like, oh, they're saying that, but they're not really going to. And so we knew exactly what the Rams were going to do coming in, and the Seahawks did not have a plan in place for how to stop it.
Nor were they able to adjust it once it presented itself.
Yeah, not at all. So yeah, basically they were waiting for Jared Goff to make a bunch of mistakes, and he made a few, but not enough. They still gave up 28 points.
So I think before we move to the Carolina Panther game, which I definitely want to do, let's talk playoff picture, because I think it plays into the next game for the Seahawks. So I just want to set the table for where we are currently, like right now today. Number one seed, 49ers, 11-2. Number two seed, Packers at 10-3. These are all division leaders at this point. Saints at 10-3, third seed. Fourth seed, Cowboys at 6-7. Lucky them, right? Those are all division leaders. Then you've got the wild cards at the Seahawks, 10-3, and the Vikings, 9-4. Seattle still in control. Three wins puts them atop the NFC West and first-round bye and home field for at least one game.
Last night's game was not about the division, even though it was a division game, and they went from being in first to being in second in the division with that loss and everything. It really, last night's game was about attempting to get the number one overall seed. By losing, that kind of makes that really difficult to happen. But last night's game was more about, it was about that. It wasn't about the division, because if the Seahawks go out and win the next three games, it doesn't matter what the 49ers do. The Seahawks will still win the division, even though they're in second place right now, because that last game against the 49ers would bring, even if the 49ers go 2-0 going into that game, they would end up coming out of week 17 with the same record, and the Seahawks would have the tiebreaker. So that week 17 game becomes for the division, and the first round, or the first, and a first round bye, but the number one overall seed has almost completely gone out of play.
So currently, sixth seed Vikings would play third seed Saints. And so then you would have the fifth seed Seahawks at the fourth seed Cowboys, the 6-7 Cowboys. You'd still have to travel to Dallas to play that game, but I'll take that game at this point. And then the first seed 49ers, second seed Packers currently have byes. So if we flip that and we win out and we take the division, we'd be in either the first or second seed at that point. We'd have a bye, and then we'd go from there. Playoff seedings obviously would change teams and all that kind of stuff. But that's where we're at. All we need to do right now is take care of business. And that's really, I mean, we should have been doing that against the Rams. I get it, though. The Rams were desperate. They want to make the playoffs. They're still a prideful team in the Super Bowl last year. Didn't surprise me that they came to play. It did surprise me a little bit that Seattle did not. But I'm over it. Time to move on. Now we go to Carolina. 10-3 Seattle faces 5-8 Carolina Panthers. Carolina's got a lot of crap going on. They fired their head coach, Ron Rivera, a couple weeks ago. They got a new coach, Perry Fewell. He's kind of a defensive kind of guy, but they've lost their last five games and six out of the last seven by a combined score of 227 to 134. They're just getting wiped out for the most part in most of these games. Cam Newton had surgery this week on his foot, but he's been out since week three. So they've gone with a guy by the name of Kyle Allen, and Kyle Allen has been okay, but he's made a lot of mistakes, as rookies do. He's got 2,750 yards, 16 TDs, 12 interceptions, quarterback rating of 82.9, which isn't bad for a rookie. But he's on a current five-game losing streak where he's got seven touchdowns, eight interceptions, three lost fumbles, and sacked 24 times. So that points to a lot of different things. Their team is completely dysfunctional at this point, and we need to go and take care of business as a playoff team, as a 10-3 team, and go down and really just take it to them. You know, there's no reason why we shouldn't win this game by double digits. This should not come down to a field goal in the fourth quarter. What are your thoughts overall on Carolina, on the Seahawks, on this game, on, you know, a couple of their key players that might have an impact in this game?
Well, the key to this game is slowing down Christian McCaffrey. If they can, I mean, this is the only non.
This is his show.
This is the only non-quarterback in the MVP discussion. And while he won't get it, he's way too far down, and his team's not winning, so it's not going to be there.
His stats are crazy, Keith. 246 rushes for 1,220 yards for a 5.0 average. 12 TDs also. 726 yards receiving with four TDs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's like Mr. Offense right there.
Yeah, he is their offense. I mean, he just, both phases, he is the one thing that they have going for them. The Seahawks need to key on him. They need to keep multiple people keying on him, because without McCaffrey, they don't really have much of anything. So they need to focus on stopping the run, and if it's not a run, getting two people covering McCaffrey at all times. And if they do that, they will stop this Carolina team from moving the ball and putting up points, because he really is the one thing that they have going for them. And, you know, Kyle Allen, when he first came in, looked actually pretty good the first two or three games. And everyone was like, hey, maybe he's the future.
He won his first five games.
Yeah. So there was like, oh, maybe he's the future in Carolina, and they just got lucky that, you know, Newton got hurt and they had this undrafted guy that they're going to be in there. But the wheels have certainly fallen off on that. Teams have figured him out a little bit. He just hasn't been able to command the offense in the same way he did early on. And, you know, now they're stuck looking. I think that, you know, Cam Newton's time in Carolina is likely done, along with Ron Rivera's. And this, the fact that he's missed all of this game or all of this season, with the exception of the first couple of games, is going to be part of the reason why. And it's just, he's never really,
he's never gotten over the hump.
Yeah. Like, he's never really evolved beyond what he was the first few years. And I think the team will want to, not pay him the huge salary and instead find someone, you know, on a rookie contract, that whether that be Allen or whether that be someone they draft this year, and then build the team around them using the extra cap room. So I think that's going to be kind of the thing. This is a team in transition. That's why they fired Rivera, because they want to go in a completely different direction. They want to rebuild this team from the ground up. And I think the Seahawks need to take advantage of that. I mean, the Panthers are going to play with pride. They're going to have guys out there that are, you know, playing for their job, and they know they're playing for their next big paycheck and all of that. So there's going to be a lot of effort. But I just think from a talent standpoint and from a scheme standpoint, there's just not much that they can do outside of McCaffrey, like, going crazy.
They got a couple other players of note on offense. I mean, DJ Moore is a quality wide receiver. I would take him on our offense for sure. He's got over 1,000 yards, four TDs. Greg Olsen's still there kicking around. Curtis Samuel's got... you know, again, these guys have got, you know, 40, 45 receptions for 500 plus yards and a few TDs. That's it. Panthers overall, though, are negative six in turnover ratio. That's been a big factor for them, turning the ball over. Allen's susceptible to fumbles. They're susceptible to sacks and pressure. He's susceptible to interceptions when he gets pressured. Their defense is not good. They're in the bottom third of the NFL in defense and DVOA, and statistically 27th in points, 25th in yards, 29th against the run, which should be interesting for them this week. They've got a guy that we're familiar with, Bruce Irvin. Bruce Irvin's 5.5 sacks on the season. He's 32 years old, 5.5 sacks. First round pick in 2012. Been around a little bit now, but he's still able to get to the quarterback occasionally. Hope he doesn't get to Russell Wilson. They've got a couple other guys. Mario Addison, you got to account for that guy. He's got 9.5 sacks on the season. Brian Burns, 5.5 sacks from the linebacker spot. That's it really on their team. Oh, Mike Davis. They picked up Mike Davis the other week. I wanted to talk to you about that a little bit. Mike Davis just did not catch on with Chicago at all after signing a free agent deal in the offseason. They let him go a couple weeks ago, ended up with the Panthers. I don't know if he's going to play, if he's going to have any touches, whatever, but he hasn't done anything this year statistically. What's up with Mike Davis?
I don't know. When he got signed with the Bears, they looked at him as being a potential feature back. I mean, they knew they had Tarik Cohen to be like the change of pace, that, you know, the gimmick, get the gadget player, because he's little but he's super fast and all of that. And but what they wanted was a guy to pair with him that could grind it up between the tackles. And having seen what he did with Seattle the last couple of years as, you know, the backup, they thought, okay, he's going to be that guy. He's going to get, you know, 10, 12 touches a game, pounding up the middle and really making teams honor the run game to help Trubisky in the passing game, and also to help Cohen be a change of pace back and not expected to carry the load. But it just never came together. He never really got his touches. They kept looking at other players. The offense completely fell apart. Trubisky has been bad for most games. So it just, nothing has worked well in that offense. And then finally, they just decided to cut their losses and get out from underneath his contract now, because they did give him a little bit of money. And so rather than have that stretch out and become a thing that lasts into next season, they were like, okay, let's just end this, get him out there, and then go play other people. And so he got to go over to Carolina. I don't see a lot of I don't really get his fit in Carolina. I guess maybe he would be the change of pace back, because mm-hmm. he's the power.
He'd be your short yardage guy.
Yeah, your third and one or your goal line guy. So that maybe McCaffrey doesn't take quite so many hits and that kind of thing. But, you know, that's McCaffrey's show. That's his game. And so I just don't. It's not necessarily a great fit, but even if he is going to be the short yardage guy to try and help with some of that, he isn't going to be a guy that's going to make a massive impact in the game. Because if you're not giving McCaffrey like 90% of the snaps, you're doing something wrong as a coach.
So we all know Luke Kuechly's still there. He's got 114 tackles this year. Eric Reed, somebody to keep track of at safety. He's got 107 tackles, which is problematic for their defense, because if he's getting that many tackles in the second or third level in that defense, that's a problem. He's also got four sacks, so they're kind of stunning him a little bit. Shaq Thompson at linebacker, I already really liked him in the draft. 103 tackles with three sacks. That's it for Carolina. This is not a good team. We're facing them on the road, though. 10 a.m. game Sunday. I think we'll tie the show up a little bit early this week. What do you think? As far as a prediction, do you think the Seahawks rebound and really just take care of business? I mean, this really kind of shows you what kind of team Seattle is, I think, this game.
Well, yeah. And I think the fact that, you know, they went and they got embarrassed on the road against the Rams. They didn't show up. There was no energy. They played terribly. But the Rams are a good team. I mean, they're not a great team, but they're a good team. They're a team that's trying to stay alive in the playoff race. And that win helped them stay alive in the playoff race. So there's that. What you end up with is you know, now they have to go play in a team that's significantly worse. But because of the loss and because of the way the loss happened, I don't expect the team to have this dip, you know, where they like play down to their opponent and really just are unfocused and all of that. They lost. They got, you know, they got their ass handed to them a little bit. They're going to go try and get things right. They're going to go down and they're going to want to manhandle the Panthers. And when you're the better team and you've got that level of energy and that level of effort, I think it will come out. I think it'll show up. I think it'll be a pretty easy win for the Seahawks. I don't know if it's going to be a blowout, even though the Panthers are definitely a team that can be blown out. Just because if Seattle gets a lead, then they're just going to run and they're just going to grind the clock down. And so I could see them getting a lead and then grinding the clock out and winning, you know, something like, you know, 24-13. So it's double digits, but it's a low scoring game, and it's a low scoring game, not because, the Seahawks couldn't score more points, but because they got a lead and then they didn't care. And they just tried to, okay, let's make this as short as possible by grinding, the clock away.
I agree with most of that. I think that you nailed it when you said that, you know, running, pounding. This is going to be a game where they're going to turn Chris Carson loose. It's going to be the Chris Carson show, and we could end up with 175 to 200 yards rushing. You're right about the low-scoring affair. I think it could be. It also could be a situation where we could put up a lot of points on their defense. Their defense is porous. It allows a lot of points. They're 27th in points allowed. Seattle scores a lot of points. Seattle's sixth in scoring. So it's quite a combination if you really think about it. I think we could definitely be up over 30, even if we give Chris Carson 25 touches in this game. They do score, though, on offense. Carolina scores 23 points a game. Seattle's defense is middling. I think that points to the fact that Carolina could probably score 21 to 24 points in this game. But I think Seattle could score 28 to 40 points. So it's just a matter of if Seattle shows up. The other thing that really interests me in this game is if Russell Wilson could rebound and take advantage of a poorer team, inferior talented team, and get back to a dominant kind of play that I think that I'd like to be able to see him get to before they get to the playoffs. I want to see the team kind of find their consistency on offense. I want Russell Wilson to find some consistency. I want Tyler Lockett to come back in the fold and show that he's healed up from his apparently somewhat severe knee contusion not a knee contusion, but a leg bruise somewhere on his leg. He just hasn't been the same since. I want to see if he can come back. This is an opportunity for Seattle to get right.
He also had the flu in there.
And the flu.
He also had the flu in there, this is a rumor. We had Pete Carroll was worried about, he said he was worried about compartment syndrome, which is, you know, where the swelling gets bad enough that it starts cutting off the blood flow. So they were worried about that. And he actually stayed in the hospital for a couple of days because they
but
were worried about
it. But he came back. He was cleared, though.
True, he was cleared, but it's still... Like, and that's just a lot of pain and a lot of swelling and a lot of like dealing with that kind of stuff. And then your joints start to get stiff with that kind of swelling. So it's going to take us some time to get back. And then you throw in the fact that he ended up with the flu a week ago. Like, I think
maybe that's what took it out of the Seattle team against the Rams. I mean, prior to that game, Keith, they had at least 8 or 9 players reported sick throughout the week. That's a lot of energy lost.
That is true. There were a bunch of guys that had the flu over the course of the week, and then they tried to just like play through it hopefully get people better and that kind of stuff, which I mean, that you can have that. That could be a thing. I don't want to use that as an excuse because I just think that, okay, if a guy's sick and can't play, play someone else. Energy should not be the problem. And if that's why, it's like, well, yeah, of course he didn't have energy. He's, you know, sick and throwing up. He's got the flu. Well, then why is he out there? Get someone else out there who has the energy. I just don't think that is, like, for me, I mean, you end up playing a bunch of backups because your starters are sick. At least the effort level will be there. But when the effort level's not there, that's when it's a problem. And that's what I saw in this game, was just the effort level was bad. And they got worked because they just came out flat and just didn't have the energy necessary to win an NFL football game?
Seattle, Carolina. Seattle 31, Carolina 21. That's my prediction.
Okay. What did I say? 24-13?
Something like that. That's right. So we're both kind of double-digit wins, and we'll see what happens. I'm very curious as to find out which Seahawks team shows up, and I'm assuming and I presume that it's going to be the team that we all expect, and we'll take this game and we'll kind of get back on track, and we'll forget about the Rams game and keep going forward, and playoffs, here we come. So that's it for this week, guys. Thanks for listening. We really appreciate it. Follow us on Twitter. Keith is at Myers NFL. I am at MW Seahawk. The show is at Hawks Playbook, and HawksPlaybook.com has all of the shows archived. And subscribe on your favorite podcast app. So until next time, Keith, go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
Hawks Playbook podcast listeners, thanks for joining us for another edition of the show. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Google Podcasts, or listen at our website, HawksPlaybook.com. Follow us on Twitter. Bill is at NW Seahawk. Keith is at Myers NFL. And the show is at Hawks Playbook. See you next week, and go Hawks.